The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. You go back to, you go to church this Sunday, this coming Sunday. You know, we're rolling up on Easter here pretty soon. And your pastor says, okay, you want the good news or the bad news? Here's the bad news. I'm stepping down. I'm going to leave the pastorate. And here's the good news. I'm going to be your congressman or perhaps your senator here in the great state of North Carolina. How would that roll in your church? Would you be happy about that? Would you not? Congressman Mark Walker's here in the studio with me. We were at an event earlier today with our friends at the American Renewal Project.
Yes.
And calling out and really challenging more pastors to do what you did, Mark, which was to kind of come out of the pastorate and get involved with the political realm, get out there into the public sphere in a slightly different way. And like some of the people were saying earlier today, if you're a pastor, you're involved in politics. You may not know it, but right. You are. Because of the pulpit and the calling on your life. But it's great to have you here. We have a lot to talk about, and going from being a member of the House to trying to be a member of the U.S. Senate, that's a big leap, some would say, but that's a calling on your life. And it's just great to have you here. Thanks for being in. How are you?
Steve, I am doing great. It's a joy to be with you. Thank you for all the work that you do when it comes to communicating some of these values, obviously through a biblical lens and a biblical filter. But yes, I still remember making that decision and coming to terms with it, but was at peace about it when I left the business world to do something I swore I would never do, and that's follow my father's footsteps as a pastor. Just as peace about stepping away from ministry to move into the political arena, and God was gracious to open up some doors.
Yeah. What kind of moved you? What was the Lord doing in your life that you look up from a pulpit one day and consider Washington, D.C.?
Well, at first I thought, just how can I get involved locally? How can I get out there and make sure that we're doing all we can? I think as citizens, we're called to be able to be engaged and to be informed, and even more so than maybe what we've been in the past. So I remember specifically when we lost an election in 2012, I literally walked out of the television area where I was watching, walked down the hallway, and I told my wife, I'm running for the United States Congress. Mm. Now, she's an ER trauma level one nurse. I won't tell you verbatim what she told me back at that point. But no, she's been great. But that's been part of the journey, and we just tried to be obedient and move forward. And God's been just incredible as for some of the opportunities, not just when we ran, but even arriving in the U.S. Congress.
Yeah. What did you think a political life was going to be like before you got there? And then take us in the world of being there. We have a mutual friend, Mike Johnson, who serves in Congress from Louisiana. I have other friends that have made it into Congress. Sue Myrick, Dan Forrest, a previous lieutenant governor. I had her on the show right after she retired, 18 years in Congress.
Yeah.
And I had her on the show, and I asked her, what is it like now versus what it was like when you first got there? And she said, when I first got to Congress, I started a women's Bible study, and we invited all the women mm-hmm. in the House. And we had women from both sides of the aisle coming, and we would just set aside our differences and get into the Word, which was awesome. Sure. But by the time she left, you don't even bother. The vitriol was so bad, the division was so bad.
And it's only getting worse because of the advent of how important social issues should be to believers. But specifically to the heart of your question, one of the things I inadvertently discovered is that on my way to Congress, I used to think that the corruption started after you got there, and it does. But what I realize is so much of it happens on your way there. People, special interest group, they don't come up and offer six figures unless they want something in return.
Sure.
So since nobody expected me to win or nobody knew of me, I went through, got through three different elections in about a six-month period of time. I show up in Washington, D.C. They're like, who are you and how did you get here? I'd been there a week, and my chief of staff brings in an article either in the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post that had me listed as the least wealthy member of the 114th class.
As if that was a bad thing.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking these guys do their good research there. I was a pastor for 16 years. What do you expect? But here's what I really discovered. The first 60 to 90 days, you define who you are and what kind of member you're going to be, because they come at you with everything. And if you can last and hold your values and hold your principles those first 60 to 90 days, you can survive and actually do something, be effective. But if it's only based in political beliefs, you'll move with the wind.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's based in your faith, that's what gives you the foundation to be able to weather that kind of political storm.
Yeah, and when you get in there, I would imagine, well, it's fully expected that you're going to get some flack and pressure and all kinds of stuff from the left. But I would imagine there's some challenges within your own party, because you can all have an R next to your name. But whether we're talking about people in the faith or out of the faith, there's going to be some variance there.
I think the bigger challenges are the ones that come from inside the camp. Just as a believer, when you're, you know, Ephesians 6 talks about taking on the fiery darts of the devil. You're kind of frontward faced. Your center of gravity. It's those blind shots that sometimes can take you off your feet. And that's what you don't expect sometimes, is when the establishment shows up and says, listen, you need to be a team player. You need to do this. You need to do that. When you know it goes against the principles or the best interest or the wish of the people that sent you there to begin with. So sometimes, I remember one night on the House floor, I had a special order, had Jim Jordan and Mick Mulvaney and some of the guys come down and speak on it. It was called a night, hashtag Get Moving Mitch. Now, Mitch McConnell didn't think it was that funny, but, but we were trying to send a point when we had the majority in both houses that this was the time to get something done.
Yeah, and so how did your faith then inform your role as a member of Congress?
Well, first of all, I remember this, and this, wherever we're called to serve, we don't have an exemption from being a light for Jesus Christ.
Yeah, amen.
Even in the political arena where you feel like sometimes you're a gladiator and you've got to kill this progressive lion in a way that Christ can still be honored. It's a paradox in some ways. But I think if you stay close to the Lord, I mean, genuinely walk with the Lord best you can, and I'm not saying that I'm perfect by any means, God gives the guidance to be able to navigate even in this arena where people can still see you as someone who is a Christ follower, even when you've got to stand up and be strong on some of these decisions.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we were talking about this before we went on the air, is how you act, and not just the content of what you say, but how you say it, how you treat people. You were talking about relationships, which is so important. And as you look up at Congress, again, your primary role, when you're a believer, is you're an ambassador. You're an ambassador before you're a congressman. And you're an ambassador 24/7. So if you're an ambassador to France, that's just not Monday through Friday. You go out and party like a rock star on Saturday, you've got a problem because of who you're representing and what your job is. But were you surprised or disappointed in the faith environment up in D.C.? Because I think most of us looking from the outside in would assume there's very few people like you, Mark. Well, but the reality is maybe a little bit different.
Well, yes and no. And I think this is such a good point that you're wading into here. Let's be frank about it. There's a lot of nominal Christianity within the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost the application. You just check the box.
Sure, yeah, and it's kind of like the pro-life thing. And, of course, we're the pro-life party. Okay, well, you show me your pro-life faith by what you say.
Yes.
I want to judge you by what you do. We're talking to Congressman Mark Walker, soon to be a U.S. Senator. This is Steve Noble and the Steve Noble Show. We'll be right back
after this.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, live today with Congressman Mark Walker. Walker4NC. That's the number four, by the way. Walker4NC.com as he's moving from the House. Hopefully with God's blessing and grace to the U.S. Senate. And it's great to have you in the studio today. And let's make sure this isn't the only time we do this. So anytime you're in Raleigh, just make sure you let me know.
I'll do it, Steve. Thanks for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. It's great to have you here. Great to have you in Congress. And in 6 years, when you went up there, what did you think was going to happen?
Well, I didn't know for sure, not having any kind of background in politics, running as an outsider, you're not for sure, but we hit the ground running. I think the background of being a pastor, there's a certain experience that you get in dealing with people from all walks of life that really makes a strong transition into the political arena. That's why I think other pastors, other faith leaders, people involved in ministry should be encouraged to run. Because you're not just set. I tease sometimes Trey Gowdy and I, along with John Ratcliffe and Senator Tim Scott, used to go to lunch about once, or dinner about once a week in D.C. And sometimes I would start with say, well, you know, I'm not an attorney. And he would say, quit bragging. So yeah, you need some people, I think, from different backgrounds, specifically in the ministry area.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, before we hit the break, I was asking you about the spiritual climate in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of us on the outside looking in assume it's dry.
Yeah.
That all the bones there are dry. None of them are going to rattle. And so that's just the deal. But what was your experience being up there for 6 years?
Here's what I found out. As we were talking going into it, there's certainly in the Republican Party, it's almost the application process to run for office, born again Christian. Yeah, better check that. But I will tell you, I was privileged to be the co-chairman with Senator James Langford of the Prayer Caucus. And every Monday evening when we would fly in, you'd get in about Monday afternoon. First votes in D.C. are usually about 6:30 p.m., and then you would have about a 30 or 35-minute break. There were 15 to 20 members, men and women, Republicans. There was one Democrat that would sneak in from time to time. They primaried him out, Dan Lipinski. He's gone. He was a pro-life guy, so they wanted to get rid of him, and a very sad situation. But we would gather together, pray for God's guidance, and pray. And these guys were are faith warriors, and it was just so refreshing that you would be, even in the halls of Washington, D.C., right there in the Capitol, that you would be able to surround and build relationships with 15, 20 members who really lived out their faith.
Yeah, which is so encouraging to know that they're there. But the reality of that, the sad reality, is that's 15 or 16 or 20 out of 465. And is there a concern for members of Congress, either in the House or the Senate, that if they get outed too much as a born-again Christian, that that's going to be a problem for them?
Yes, some of them feel that way. Obviously, the one member that came, and actually we snuck him in the back to see the movie Unplanned over at Heritage at one point, because they would immediately, in fact, the three Democrats that voted that a baby should actually be allowed to live, all three were primary, two were taken out, only a gentleman from San Antonio survived it. So there's a price to pay on the Democrat side, but there's also some of the guys on the Republican side, like, I don't want to get branded, I don't want to be one-dimensional, I don't want to be one lane. But historically, our founding fathers did not have a problem declaring the boldness in the faith.
That's right.
All through our founding documents, all through the scripture that's engraved throughout Washington, D.C.
Well, Jesus made it pretty obvious, if you deny me before men, I'll deny you before my Father in heaven. And if you acknowledge me, then he's going to acknowledge you. And so God always rewards faithfulness.
I think he does, and I think that's the challenge. Whatever place or lane that God calls us is certainly to keep that witness, to keep that light. Be successful, be strong, be firm, be bold, but it doesn't mean that you have to sacrifice either your witness or your light either.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, let's talk about your voting record. I saw this piece earlier today, which was really helpful. As we look at other people that were out there that we know to be very conservative people, whether we're talking about Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Tom Cotton, Josh Hawley, Rick Scott, Ben Sasse, people like that, Mike Lee. And then there's this guy, Mark Walker, who is, you come across as a gentle soul. Yet your voting record compared to Trump and your voting record compared to all these pretty well-known conservatives, you're actually voting more conservative.
Yeah,
we
were surprised on this information that came out from Project 538 when we saw that data that would list me the number one pro-Trump conservative, if you will, in the Senate had we been serving there. I make no bones about it. If you look at the American Conservative Union, Heritage, all the different scorecards, we're always top 1% or 2%. But God began to work in my heart when I first arrived in Congress, that it's not just about preaching to the choir. It's not just always being the most obnoxious person in the room. How do you take that message of individual liberty and hope and prosperity and opportunity? If we really believe that, shouldn't we want to take that to new places, to new communities? And that's where there's an evangelical parallel there. How do you get out there and make sure people who've been oppressed by this liberal orthodoxy, this ideology, how do you break through that and let these people share in this great experiment called America?
Yeah, it's a great point. And when you talk about progressive ideology, I don't have a problem saying progressivism and that type of liberalism is actually at its core evil, because so much about it is anti-God,
no question,
and anti-biblical.
Yes.
Do we need to kind of acknowledge that more? Now, obviously, I'm not going to expect your garden variety conservative to do that, but a conservative that's also a believer, I think we get afraid to bring spiritual language into it because it's going to be offensive to some people, but it is a reality.
Steve, this is Ephesians 6:18. We're not wrestling against Republicans and Democrats. We're representing this darkness in high places, and this is spiritual warfare. And if there's a reason that every listener that you have should be engaged, should be informed, should be involved, it's because of exactly the battle that's facing, not just for our time, but the liberties that are eroding for our children and for our grandchildren. It's going to take all of us.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, you're mentioning children and grandchildren. There's a word we don't use very much anymore, but that was central to what our founding fathers were doing, which is posterity. Yes. I didn't say prosperity, by the way, all the Joel Osteen fans out there. I said posterity, which is the people. I said that, not Mark Walker, which are the people coming behind us. You mentioned children and grandchildren. When I start showing my students, my high school students, the state of the nation debt, what's happening there, what's happening around the world, and they ask that question, Mr. Noble, what can we do to fix it? I don't have a great answer. And I tell them, listen, I'm going to be with the Lord by the time all this really comes crashing down.
Sure.
But you guys probably won't. And that's a huge moral topic. I don't think we talk about our financial condition as a nation in moral terms, and we need to.
We need to. I was privileged to be the last member in the House that was able to get a balanced budget amendment to the floor, all other 50 states, or the 50 states have to do so.
Yeah.
Congress doesn't have to, right? And the only place where I don't have 100% voting record with this past administration is I voted against the omnibus. I voted against the spending bills.
Good.
Because if you do the math, this bill, this horrendous piece of legislation that passed that gave $1,400 checks to everybody is actually going to cost you $4,500.
That's right.
That only makes sense in Washington math.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Washington math and people that own and operate casinos. I mean, the House always wins,
yeah.
And somebody's going to pay that loss, and it's going to be our kids. How do you kind of – I want to – we're going to hit a break in about a minute, but kind of the highs and lows of your 6 years in Congress. You have an exemplary voting record, but some of the highs as a member of Congress, but also some of the lows. And I also want to ask you, as an evangelical and a conservative, how you kind of dealt with somebody like Donald Trump, because there were a lot of Christians that ran for the hills because they couldn't deal with the realities of his administration, his accomplishments, the things that he actually did versus sometimes who he was, how he would tweet, how he would treat people. How did you kind of deal with that? Because, like I said, a lot of Christians just kind of ran for the hills.
Well, you know, talked about highs and lows and how we dealt with that. Probably get into some of the story. But
yeah.
I've got a really good story of insight, maybe one night at the White House that kind of speaks to that.
Oh,
exactly.
That would be wonderful. Yeah. Let's do that. And then I want to talk to you about your definition of conservatism. We'll talk about some of the things that are going to be central to your campaign. We're talking to Congressman Mark Walker running for North Carolina. Not just North Carolina. What do you think it's the U.S. Senate, the big fish, Walker4NC.com. That's the number four, Walker4NC.com. We'll be right back.
Here.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you guys. We've got a great week here on the show and excited to have Congressman Mark Walker with us today. He's running for U.S. Senate here in the great state of North Carolina. Tomorrow, what are you doing tomorrow, Steve? I don't know yet. Tune in tomorrow. You'll find out at 4 p.m. I don't know yet. Sometimes the Lord doesn't give me that until shortly before the show starts. Wednesday, I'll be in the office with Ann Graham Lotz. We'll be over at her ministry. So excited to spend time with her. Chad Harvey, who you know.
Yes.
Pastor Chad Harvey will be back in the studio for Theology Thursday this week, which will be great. We always have a lot of fun. He's a bold guy.
He is. And you need some guys like that.
You need some guys like that. We need more and more guys like that. And that's why we're grateful for all of your service, not just in the pastorate, Mark, but in Congress and then hopefully in the U.S. Senate as
Thanks,
well.
Thanks, Steve.
You had a couple stories you wanted to share. These are great because most of us just kind of watch all this stuff from the outside in. Mm-hmm. But with Mike Pence and then as well as with President Trump. But let's start with Pence.
I became the first member to ever run for chairman of the largest caucus in Congress, the Conservative Republican Study Committee. I just felt like that was something that our background experience, we got elected. This is the same term that the President Trump and Vice President Pence got elected as well. So 2 months into their administration, I reach out, I call the Vice President, and I say, Mr. Vice President, I've got an idea. And he's like, well, what is it? And I said, if I get everybody in the room, all the Republicans that can make the decisions on Obamacare, the ACA, we've been promising that we would repeal it for years. I've been here 2 years. You've been here 2 months. Why don't you work with me? Let's get this done. He said, Mark, you got a deal. So we got about 40 people in there, everybody from the Freedom Caucus to RSC to the committee chairs. And it took us about 2 or 3 weeks, but we built a blueprint. So I remember one Thursday evening, I got a call from the White House and they said, this is done. Let's do this. They said, can you be in the Oval Office tomorrow and bring your 12 guys? You know, for some reason, then the last 2 years over the Obama administration, I had never received an invite to go hang out in the Oval Office.
I wonder why.
So we got over there about 9 o'clock the next morning. I come walking into the Oval Office, first time ever, and I'm trying not to look at everything. And Vice President's there, greeted me, said, thank you for all the work you did. He said, we want you seated right next to the president. 30 seconds later, the president's coming in. I'm like, focus, you know, talk about what you're here for. So there's a great picture of the president and I shaking hands as far as literally repealing Obamacare and defunding Planned Parenthood in one piece of legislation that was part of the reconciliation process without getting through the weeds. It was just a moment of saying, you know what? We made a promise to the American people, and today we got to deliver on it.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
And yeah, it was very cool. And taking tens of millions of dollars out of Planned Parenthood's pockets was a big move. I wish we could have defunded them all $500 million, but we hadn't seen anybody touch their money ever.
No.
And it was how do we not? It's unconscionable that year after year and term after term, we're still funding them when we have control.
Well, even expanding on this with the reduction of the Mexico policy from Reagan, Joe Biden, and that is second day in the office, is now not just here in this country, but your taxpayers' dollars now are going internationally to fund specifically in these third world countries.
And the Hyde Amendment, essentially, they're just ignoring it.
Yes.
And we're just going to keep spending American tax dollars on abortion. It's just horrendous. What about what Donald Trump himself? We'll talk about, because I know you had a chance to share the gospel with them, which is awesome. I've talked to a lot of different people that have a lot of different opinions about the state of our 45th president's soul. I can't make that call. No man can. But how did you just deal with the fact that Donald Trump's Donald Trump? Because a lot of Christians really struggled with that.
Well, let's start from the beginning. This is a real estate tycoon, New York playboy real estate guy. I mean, that's just who he is. And a lot of people, and I agree, you needed something different in Washington, D.C. to shake things up that wasn't part of the swamp, that didn't kiss the brass ring.
Yeah.
But to take the leap that this guy is, out there evangelically where we are is not the case. And I think if you take an honest approach, it best helps you understand. Specifically, I remember getting a call one night inviting me over for dinner. About six or seven members were there that have some kind of ministry background. It was the day before National Day of Prayer. So I'm sitting about 4 or 5 feet from the president and right to his left, and he's talking about this conversation that he had with the Pope and the concern about the rise of fundamental Islamist behavior throughout Europe. And I just said, Mr. President, he calls me Mock with that New York accent. And I said, well, you see, that's the difference between Christianity and all other world religions. He said, what is that? I said, well, with all other world religions, it requires you to do something. But in Christianity, it's what we call the atonement. Mm-hmm. And for about 2 or 3 minutes, I kind of broke it down as far as the blood of Christ and how it cleanses us, and that's our hope. And I will never forget the way he looked at me. It was like he was trying to intellectually understand how this was a transactional.
Yeah.
So it was just a neat moment. And a couple hours later, I remember walking out of the White House thinking that night, man, I'm just a small town preacher's kid that just got to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with the president. And that's probably one of the moments that stand out to me in my time there.
And I think he's probably been one of the most evangelized people in America in the last 5 years.
Well, there's no question. And the fact that he came with a blank slate and he trusted these evangelicals to come in and lead on things like pro-life, lead on religious liberty. But he's the only guy that dressed down the United Nations on their infringements on religious liberty.
Yeah, amazing.
He deserves to be applauded for
that. That's exactly right. Yeah, and so that was he is who he is. And by the way, before you pick up the stone and throw it at the president, you might want to spend some time in front of a mirror, because there's none righteous, no, not one. That includes us that are in the family of faith. And so I can separate the man and some of his tendencies and the things that he's said and done from what he's done as the president of the United States and his administration, because you're always dealing with that. Everybody's a mixed bag. I don't care if you're talking about President Trump, Congressman Mark Walker, Steve Noble, everybody's a mixed bag.
That is correct.
And we have to apply weights and measures equally. And don't let politics get in the way of that. I had a friend texted me because I think he was shocked when he said, okay, you get a $1,400 check, but it's actually going to cost you $4,500.
Yes.
Can you explain that in kind of simple terms? Because we can get down into the weeds, and I have a tendency to do that. But I think that's probably shocking to people. This is a normal way of – this is common core math in D.C. world.
Well, it is, and I think Republicans need to be talking about this. It's not the sexiest topic, if I can go there.
Sure.
But here's the thing, without getting into the weeds, I'll give you one point. The top 50% wage earners pay 97% of all federal taxes. That's why you have $1,400 going to people that weren't even impacted by COVID. Only 9% of this – bill went to COVID relief. The rest of it went to the vice president's alma mater, different construction projects in Chuck Schumer's world. So this was, you talking about pork.
Oh,
this was just absolutely pathetic. I hope enough American people get upset enough about this that they're not going to continue to put up with it.
Yeah, so you look at $1,400, but the way they spend all the money, it's ridiculous, because they're always, and liberals tend to always overplay their hand. They're overplaying their hand in D.C. They're overplaying their hand in the culture. They're overplaying their hand with cancel culture. The question is, will we get involved enough to actually bring it back in the other direction?
Yeah, we put out a little video under our Facebook page, Walker for Senate, that had Reagan's words about warning what the nine dangerous words. I'm from the government. I'm here to help.
I'm here to help.
And then you had all these clips saying, hey, we're here to help. Help has come from all these different Democratic political leaders.
How do you look back at what happened on January 6th?
Very sadly. I mean, any time that you see an institution like ours that's being attacked in the way that it was, whether it was QAnon people or anybody else, it makes me very sad. That's one of the things that has separated America. We've debated intellectually. Our founding fathers set up a place where you didn't have to worry about Gestapo or people showing up at your front door. You had a First Amendment. You had a Second Amendment. Are they under assault? Yes. But that's not ultimately the way that we settle things in this country.
Yeah. What were you shocked that it happened? You were there, weren't you?
I was not on the Capitol property, but I was shocked. And I think you had a few agitators, and I think a lot of people who never intended to be in that position actually followed. And it was not good. And we shouldn't – that's not – we lead by a better example than that,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, that's a great point. What when you hear conservative or we say we're conservatives, how do you define that?
Well, goodness gracious, everybody puts that on their logo or brand these days.
That's right.
I think that your willingness to stand up and speak boldly on life, the sanctity of life, all stages, I think being able to engage on religious liberty, but doing more, Steve, than just talking about it. Anybody can talk about it. What are the action steps? What are you doing to be able to stand up and fight for some of these values while at the same time taking those values and taking them to places and communities that simply may have not heard because of political oppression from the left or whatever. I think that is something that when we ran for RSC chair, we called it effective conservatism. You can be as conservative as you want to, but if one, nobody's following you, or two, nobody's listening to you, how effective are you at the end of the day?
Yeah, that's a great point. And to bring people over to a conservative understanding, it helps to remember, and I teach this to my students all the time, that most people actually live conservative lives. As an individual, as a family, as a business owner, because if you don't live a conservative life, you're going under.
Well,
nobody's going to bail you out. Print your own money.
Nancy Pelosi might want to do that
at some point. Right.
But no, you make a good point. And that is the challenge that we have, to be able to take a message of this individualism to places that have been oppressed by either the education they've had, by radical politicians that say, trust me or let me have control. I think that's the challenge for 21st century conservatism. We no longer have the luxury of simply preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
Is it harder to do? Yes, but we must build the conduit of trust and relationships to take that message, because we believe in hope for them as well.
That's right. If every person you know is a conservative, you're not doing it right. You got to be able to invest in other people that might be difficult for you to be around. But we have to be championing the cause to other people, to younger people especially. We're going to talk about the primary, talk about the general election, some of the other main points that Congressman Mark Walker is campaigning on. Walker4NC.com is the website. That's the number 4. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back.
That's how our debt ties in as well to it.
That's right. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you all today. And remember what the scriptures tell us, to pray for those in authority over us, and pray for elections as well, but praying for those in authority over us. Listen, I had to learn this the hard way, because when Barack Obama was the president of the United States, I was not submitting myself to the clear authority of scripture on that one. So in my family, in my kids, the president of the United States was a punchline. And so when I finally got convicted, thanks to a good friend of mine, Jim Young, who started Capitol Commission, they do a gospel teaching on state capitals, then, hey, Steve, it's actually in the scriptures that we're to pray for those in authority over us. And whether you voted for him or not, whether you like him or not, whatever you think about Joe Biden, you're called to pray for those in authority over us. And so I had to retrain my kids that the president or anybody else was somebody that we needed to pray for. And you could pray for somebody like Mark Walker. I would imagine, Congressman Walker, that while you were serving for 6 years and now running for the U.S. Senate, I don't think prayer can probably be underestimated in any way.
Steve, I can look you in the eye, and I can tell you there are times where I could literally feel people praying for us. Tough decisions at times. And the other aspect of that is there were times where you get back on that plane on a Friday and you were depleted emotionally, physically, psychologically, spiritually, and just coming back home and sensing the people's prayers is something that I've always cherished and hope to do so in the future as well.
Yeah. How can we, and because I want to talk about a few other things, but how can we pray for you since we're on it? How can we pray for you and to go, because we're going to talk about the primary, talk about a general election, but how can we pray for you?
I just think the path ahead to make sure that we are walking with the Lord and we have a discerning spirit. And there's part of it that's also protection. And I've talked to my family. We're looking at potentially $200 million spent against us to attack us. And we're just praying that no weapon formed against us can prosper.
Yeah, amen to that. Primary versus general.
Sure.
The primary, that's probably not a fun process. I mean, you're fighting people in your own party. But what's that going to look like? What are you expecting? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, we're 4 months into this and no major announcements yet. So we're just kind of keeping our nose to the grindstone. I know there's a few out there that are maybe waiting for this person or that person. But if I can just be transparent, here's how I would address that. Either you believe in your heart you're supposed to do this or you don't. When I got in the first time, I had to run against probably considered the most powerful family in North Carolina politics. But not from an arrogant standpoint. I just believe when you're called or led to do something, you don't weigh the consequences or all of it. You just say, Lord, this is where you're going. I'm going. So primary, we're going to do what we have to do to win. And then the general election, I know there's three candidates that have announced. One raised $500,000, a state senator, Jackson there, very hard progressive guy that's serving now in the state Senate, voted against the Born Alive Amendment. So he makes no qualms about who he is or what he is. And we're going to take him on. If you look at his 6 years in the state Senate versus my 6 years in the House, I think we're going to have a strong record to take care of business, specifically in a purple state, someone that is a staunch conservative but also has had the opportunity to build bridges and to make sure that, as we've talked about, taking that message to new places and new communities.
Yeah, because one thing that's been I'm going to use the word fun. It's been fun for me to watch. You mentioned this earlier when we were talking off the air. To watch your relationship build with the African-American community, which votes
I'm very proud of that.
92-93% Democrat across the board. But when you can build a relationship, you might actually begin to see that. And then with President Trump, of course, results matter.
Yes, they do.
And a lot of people started, a lot of African-Americans, the whole Blexit movement, people starting to kind of come out of that, where they didn't really know, they hadn't really thought about it. You're raised a certain way. We all are. Most of my students, I say, how many of you have the same political views right now as your parents? And it's usually 90%+.
Right.
So this isn't just happening in the African-American community. But speak to that, because it's been wonderful.
Yeah, we've been blessed. The last poll that we did, we're 25-30% to approve a rating in the minority community. And we don't do it just because it's politically the right thing to do, Steve. We do it because it's the right thing to do for these wonderful people, is to be able to share this message of individual hope and opportunity. And that's something that we're committed to. In fact, last year, we were the only Republican in the U.S. House to win the United Negro College Foundation President's Award. We get invited to give a commencement speech at one of our fine historical black college universities. That doesn't mean I have to dumb down what I believe, but I have some opportunity that it can't be scorched earth all the time. We have to cultivate the soil. We don't have the majority in North Carolina. We don't have the majority maybe in this country. So let's be wise as serpents and harmless as doves as far as how we take that message of hope to different places.
But you have to invest in that relationship.
It has to be real.
It doesn't change overnight, and it has to be real, has to be authentic, and they know, like winning that award and being asked to come do the commencement address at a historically black college and university, they know your voting record.
I
got it right here. That's what the guy's 97.1% on the U.S. Senator's Trump score, more than Cruz, Cotton, Hawley, Sass, all these guys. And you go, okay, I would guess the regular metric, the regular political metric would say, there's no way this guy would ever
it
show up at any African-American event.
It makes no sense on paper, but when you go into the communities or these universities and you begin to talk about Psalms 139, that you are fearfully and wonderfully made. God knew you when you were in your mother's womb, which means he has a specific plan and purpose for your life. Don't let this leftist ideology federal government put a ceiling, because what's more discriminating than that than say, well, without me, this is your ceiling.
That's right.
That's not how God created us.
No, not at all. So what would you say are some of the most important points that you're going to run on, both in the primary and the general?
Well, I think, obviously, if you look at my record as far as being staunch when it comes to life, People would just assume that, but I think it's important to talk about the life at all stages, the religious liberty. I'm a strong defense guy. I know what China's doing. The last 2 years, I was the ranking member on intelligence
that
and counterterrorism.
That had to be eye-opening.
Oh, my goodness.
Was it frightening?
Oh, just watch some of the videos and some of the clips, whether it's either religious persecution or some of the things that China is intentionally doing, whether it's attacking our grid 15 to 20,000 times a day. So those are things that may be not at the top of everybody's mindset. But China's intention of taking over as a superpower, look, we've been able to evangelize the world because we were a superpower. We're the most philanthropic country in the world because of our founding
Amen.
Principles.
That's right.
And that's something that we want to continue on. But it's not just what we believe. It's the skill set, I hope, or the experience of how we take what we believe and how we get it to all the different communities we represent.
One of the things that is a big issue here in North Carolina, I'm appreciative of people that are engaging in this and talking about the public school system. Indoctrination, particularly critical race theory, we are resegregating the country.
Oh, we are. Yeah, the civil rights movement was had some great leaders there that when it came to talk about the fact that people of minority communities could use the same water fountain, the same restroom, we've come a long way, and that's the great thing about America. We never stop till we keep getting it right.
Yeah.
But what we've seen is this shift of this victimhood actually does more damage to people than liberate people, and I think it's very scary.
Oh, it's very scary, and it's being taught right down to the kindergarten level. On COVID-19, the president's speech the other night, that 24 minutes of that, when he's telling me what I'm allowed to do on 4th of July in the comfort of my own home, which, by the way, I said we were going to have a party on the 4th of July, and actually we just confirmed it. We're having a family reunion. There's going to be more than three people there. Sorry, Mr. President. But he said it over and over again, when everybody gets vaccinated. How do we approach that? How do you approach that? Because I think a mandatory vaccination is un-American.
Really. I agree. Yes, I think ultimately that is your call. Now, what the left will do is they're going to try to make this a sticking point when it comes to your liberty, your individual liberty.
Right.
And I can see it now, legislation being crafted that if you don't have a vaccine, then you're prevented from going here, grocery store, you name it. It's just another way because at the end of the day, for the left, it's about control, which means more dependence from you on me as a federal government agent.
Exactly right, yeah. So the next thing would be similar to a yellow star patch on your shoulder.
That sounds crazy.
Well,
listen, there's a lot of things my dad used to preach about that I thought were crazy that are coming true in our lifetime.
True. Yeah. That's exactly right. I know you wanted to mention something about calling. We got about 3 minutes left. But in terms of what is our calling as Christians, primarily, if I'm a Christian who's a conservative. I'm a Christian who, by God's grace, happens to live in the United States of America. But what's our calling, Mark, as citizens of two kingdoms?
I think the best way to answer that is look at Jesus' model. Is that he did not mince words when he called out the religious, which were the political leaders of the day. Brood of vipers, I mean, righteous indignation. And I think we can follow that example by those doing harm to this country by reducing our religious liberty. We have the authority to go out and point our finger and say, you're wrong. This is why you're wrong. At the same time, we're also called the second greatest commandment. All the commandments are wrapped up in two. That was to love your neighbor as yourself. Now, you can't love your neighbor if you go out there and you get in their face and tell them that they stink all the time, right? But by doing so, by building that relationship, as believers and as Americans, we can be multidimensional. We can call out those who are doing harm, but we can also love our neighbor. Listen, our speech when it comes to our fellow man should be with grace, seasoned with salt. That's hard to do sometime in a partisan world. But as I said earlier, how we started the show, God's not going to lead us anywhere that we're exempt from being a light for Jesus Christ.
That's exactly right, and that's first and foremost. There's when I used to have a monitor in here in the other studio. I had four post-it notes on there, and one of them had the word winsome on it, winsomeness. My dad loved that word. He tried to teach us that word. It took me a while to get it. But that's where you realize in Jesus, full of grace and truth, John 1:14. And it's both. You don't compromise at all, but if you're all truth and no grace, this was in a Tim Keller sermon, then you tend to be a bully. But the opposite can be true. You can be all grace and no truth, and you're a coward.
Yeah, you can compromise to the place that you get nothing done. So we look at it this way, something that I've asked my staff for 6 years. Is it about making an argument only, or is it about also making a difference?
Yeah.
And I think those merge every now and then where you stand up and you have to be a warrior, and that's what we say. Be a conservative warrior, but also be a bridge builder as well.
That's right, and especially if you name the name of Jesus. Ultimately, my witness for the gospel is more important than my political efficiency or effectiveness, and politics will pass away. This country will pass away. But souls won't.
That's correct. But we still have the obligation to stand up for those who have gone before us who've paid an ultimate price from our founding fathers to this generation.
What a great point. Mark, thanks so much for being here. It's an open invitation.
Great.
I hope you'll come back.
Loved it. Thank
and
you.
And we'll be praying for you and supporting you any way that we can. Congressman Mark Walker, walker4nc.com is the website. Walker4, that's the number 4, nc.com. In a primary maybe coming up, and then the general election, and we need more men like you, Mark, in the government. More men and women. Great to have you here today. God bless you.
Thank you.
And we'll be back tomorrow. Like I said, I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'll deal with it tomorrow. Sometime between now and tomorrow, I'll figure that out.
You got it.
Ann Graham Lotz on Wednesday, Pastor Chad Harvey on Thursday, and we're here trying to make a difference with the platform the Lord has given us. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon, and like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.